Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Now listen, you're listening to the Casterbridge Podcast with a K. Don't worry about other podcasts. Let them gawp, let them gape. Yes, did you know that we're available on Casterbridge.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com and Audioboo? Well, you do now. Good, isn't it?
Hello there, my name's Christian Corley. This is James McLean and Brian Terranova.
That would be us.
Right. I'm glad you're both on the ball. James, are you still there?
No, I was very tempted to say nothing for the rest of the podcast.
That's exactly why you showed up today. Now I understand.
Such a funny guy, isn't he? Hey? Okay, listen, Doctor Who fans out there, and do you think there's anyone listening who isn't a Doctor Who fan? That would be slightly crazy and possibly a bit sadomasochistic.
Well, it's
someone
me.
Could be extremely bored out there.
Oh, and there's James as well. Bless him. hey, now we got a message, didn't we, on Twitter? Did you see it, James?
Did we? No, I didn't.
No, we got a message on Twitter. Hang on, let me just open that up again. And just earlier today, and I said I would pass it on because we're podcasting today, and I thought it was just going to be you and I. So Brian's a kind of a surprise addition to the podcast today, which is nice.
Wait, I'm only a surprise addition because you forgot what date I told you.
Yeah, no, but anyway. Yeah, you know, why let the facts get in the way of an entertaining story?
Yeah, sure.
So we got a message from a nice person called John B, who's his Twitter username is Spunk Pouch.
Okay. Nice.
Which I never noticed earlier, but yeah, hi Spunk Pouch, and and he said,
"I'm so gonna call my son that."
He says he loves the podcast and he's been downloading for a while, but he wants James to cheer up a bit.
So. Do I sound? I suppose I do a bit.
Well, I wouldn't like to say. I thought that was just you. I wouldn't want you to change your.
James, are you feeling down? Should we get help?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to go live to the listener, yeah, I have my ups and downs, go through bad patches. I'm struggling through a bit of a bad patch. If you all really want to know, that's the case. It is. I come on here to alleviate some of that frustration by washing it upon your shores.
No, that's fair enough. Listen, we've got a lot of Doctor Who news to talk about today because we're recording on Monday, as we invariably do. And a lot of Doctor Who news from BBC Wales and Big Finish has come along today. But before we go into that, James, is there anything you want to talk about X-Files-wise at any point today? Because we've also got Brian on the show as well, who's quite keen on the X-Files.
Yes.
He is, isn't he?
A little bit.
No, well, I mean, it's been a funny week because the guy who broke the X-Files is one of my this story was one. It's one of my close friends, and there was, from what I gather, there was a lot of shocked sort of big news corporations that this story came out without them knowing about it, and you know this small media outlet in the UK comes and breaks this massive story. So it's been quite funny in that, and seeing the sort of like the little guy shock the big guys.
Yeah, that's good.
It's been an interesting roller coaster. For those who don't know, who are people who obviously don't read any sci-fi genre based websites or any major websites like Guardian, CNN, whatever, Fox has confirmed signing a deal with 1013 Pictures and 20th Century Fox Studios. I can never remember so many of the branches of Fox, who are going to produce six X-Files next year, which is a big surprise, really, because they're all so popular, you know, in the industry, the cast and crew. Didn't really think they'd find time to do it, but... to be honest, I'm surprised they want to do it. And I don't mean that in a rude way. But, you know, that show sort of carved out a name. No, not just a name, but not a typecasting. But it gave them a certain image. And I got the impression that Gillian Anderson has done her best to try and move away from that. And establish her own.
She's certainly not short of work, is she?
Well, absolutely, and establish her own identity. So I was kind of surprised that she was going to go back. She must feel very comfortable that her identity is now established, that she can go back and do that without concern. So
the other thing is, not only is she doing very well for herself, but David's actually doing very well for himself as well. And I think the thing with them always was that they would come back for more movies. They both felt confident enough that we would do that. Like that was one of the big things with David wanting to leave the show originally, was that he just wanted to stop the show but continue it as movies. He never wanted to stop being Mulder. He just didn't want to continue being Mulder on a weekly basis. So this kind of mini series thing, the fact that it is a short engagement, just 6 episodes, it's almost akin to doing, if you want, like 2 or 3 movies at one time, but you're just doing a short stint of it on TV, which they're already doing very well. And even the writers, I mean, if you followed all the actors and the writers throughout the years, all of them had said, yeah, I'll come back. Even Vince Gilligan, who's doing extremely well for himself with Breaking Bad and now Better Call Saul, he said he would be honored to write for the show again if it ever came back. And this was before this 6-episode announcement. So I'm really hoping a lot of them can make time for it. But the other thing is I doubt you can squeeze everybody in that you really want to in just these 6 episodes.
Okay.
It's an interesting sort of turn in the industry, where the industry is looking now, you know, like they did with 24 and with Heroes, previous franchises, and seeing, you know, what money can be made. Although, to be fair, Fox has always been, as far as I'm aware, has always been fairly open to the idea of revisiting the X-Files. It's just been whether Chris Carter was in a place to actually pitch anything. And after Chris has lost his Amazon series, The After, he's perhaps put him in a position where he's more in a place to actually revisit an older franchise. So it's interesting from a, you know, if you're interested in television and the industry, it's very interesting in that sort of respect as well.
I think, too, you also have, for a while, certainly after The X-Files ended, that was kind of around the same time that reality TV took off and started, in my opinion, really killing TV. And then scripted dramas really suffered very heavily in that time. And they're starting to finally come into their own in the past, you know, maybe 8 to 10 years or so, I guess, slowly building up. But it seems like even though they are doing that, obviously we're in that whole remake, reboot, rebrand kind of phase and so on. But it does make sense to kind of go back to one of the biggest deals that Fox ever had. Actually, it was the biggest show that Fox ever had, and still try to capitalize on it, because it's still, even to this day, has a massive fan base. And they're crying, they're begging for more. So it makes sense that they finally listened. But I guess obviously doing a new series would have been too difficult for all the parties involved.
It goes beyond a fan base. I think that's the point. The explosion last weekend when TV Wise leaked this, you know, is a global media base. It's not just fans. There is an interest in the X-Files beyond that very hardcore fandom. And I think what is very interesting now, and we can tie this back to Doctor Who, is that there is a very, and to your point on reality TV, is that reality TV was a very easy, cheap, and expedient way to get good ratings in your schedule. But there is now a sort of a bigger understanding of globalization occurring, and people are starting in the industry start looking more seriously at not so much what you can just sell in your own land, but what you can sell abroad. And obviously you can sell reality TV abroad, but you tend to sell the license. You don't sell the shows. But X-Files will be a global profit, however critically good it is.
Yeah, very true.
In the same way that Musketeers is most likely saved, and it's got its third series, and it's shooting, I think, next month, because it sells through worldwide, globally, to a nice number of countries. And the same, obviously, with Doctor Who. Is Doctor Who sits with a very comfortable position with worldwide, because again, it is a global export, which secures it when sometimes people worry about the ratings on BBC One. Well, the BBC One ratings are to a certain degree important. The fact it's a global commodity is what keeps it going, you know, probably more so than the ratings. So how things react and can be sold on a global market. And you've only got to look at the film industry, like Transformers 4. to go and look at the box office of Transformers 4 in China, where they shot a lot of it in Hong Kong, Chinese box office was incredible. You know, it rivaled the domestic. So globalization is becoming a bigger thing, which again will change things and perhaps will be good for people who are looking for older products to be revived because there's global markets for them. So yes, it's an interesting situation to be in for all concerned.
It's funny you mentioned Heroes as well, because I've seen today that Masioka is returning as Hiro Nakamura.
Yeah.
The time-travelling guy.
It's interesting. I mean, 24 was a big spark off, I think, on this sort of approach, going back to 24. But I'm surprised Heroes has managed to scrape through. I thought that could be a killer of this approach. But yeah, I think X-Files will be, you know, as I say,
I think Heroes did really well on Netflix, didn't it? I think a lot of people were catching up, rewatching it or catching up the bits. Because certainly in the UK, because it suffered a bit with the later series schedule, didn't it, Heroes?
So, yeah.
That'll have done well on Netflix.
Well, the streaming is, I think, becoming a bigger thing now, as reported with the X-Files, is there's talk about Netflix or Amazon UK or one of those sort of types doing a streaming deal in the future. And that is, as you say, it creates a stronger global market for these products. So,
I suspect Sky One will probably want to trump them, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, it'll be interesting to see who takes it. I mean, over here with the X-Files, I mean, obviously the BBC has a high investment because to a certain degree, BBC see it as, you know, it was a BBC show from a British perspective. So it'll be interesting to see whether when it comes to acquisitions, whether there'll be a bidding war between BBC and, as you say, Sky One.
Well, I think Sky showed it later, didn't they?
They did, yeah. So who's going to be willing to strike the better deal, package deal? So it is a very interesting industry at the moment, you know, for television fans, in the sense that it is changing. As you know, we've all said the last few years, there's going to be big changes. I know I have. And you're seeing them really starting now in the way that you're sort of getting. The question is, will it get, as we said very earlier, like the film franchises, where it's just reboots and remakes and safe commodities to make money back?
Well, this all ties in nicely with our first news item today.
Good.
Which begins like this. That's the theme tune to Game of Thrones, for those of you who don't know.
I didn't know either.
Okay then. And you guys. And it's the news that Maisie Williams, who plays Arya Stark in Game of Thrones, has been cast in Doctor Who Series 9. And that's been announced today. She's a youngish girl, so she may be a Cole Hill student. We don't know, because no details about the character have been released. Although I do know, having seen reports of location shooting, that there is a Cole Hill student involved at some point. Whether it's her or not, she's already shot her stuff and now she's just been announced today. Who knows? We're not entirely certain about that. But there's more casting news as well. Although it does come after, because Richard Madden, who is Prince Charming in the new Cinderella film, and he was a character in the first two or three series of Game of Thrones, Robb Stark. He's also Jenna Coleman's boyfriend. He's been saying that he wants to be in Doctor Who. But that doesn't seem to be happening for him at the moment. A girl who played his little sister's got in there. But, you know, that's how life is, really, isn't it? She's not the only new casting. Rufus Hound has been cast, James.
Yes, old Rufus. Rufus Hound.
Which isn't his real name. Isn't his real name.
Yes.
He's a comedian and Doctor Who fan as well. He was on the. You remember the old.
Comedian.
The 50th anniversary. No, not the 50th. The Capaldi revealing show.
Oh yeah.
That we podcasted through. He was on that and called. He got someone's name wrong, who he really shouldn't have got. He called Paul Davison the wrong name or something like that. There you go. Anyway, so. He's also been cast, and various other people have been announced today. Ian Conningham, Murray MacArthur, Barnaby Kay, who's the husband of Nicole Walker, who plays what's the lady in the Dark Eyes series called? Who isn't Molly? The other one, is it Liv Chenka?
Oh, Liv Chenka. Yeah,
Nicole Walker. So
that's it. Yeah,
they're a couple. Arian Bakari, Simon Lipkin, Tom Stoughton, and Struan Roger. So lots of names announced today from for the BBC. We've also got two new writers confirmed as well. We've got Jamie Matheson writing a story with Stephen Moffat. Some eyebrows raised there. And we've also got Catherine Tregana as well. I'll just confirm those story titles if I dare and can find them. Catherine Tregana's story is The Woman Who Lived, and the Matheson-Moffat collaboration is The Girl Who Died, interestingly. So these items of factual knowledge have been announced today. So it's nice to see Doctor Who Series 9 is ramping up the momentum now with casting announcements. Because it's been pretty quiet since the Michelle Gomez return news, which was back in February, I think. Well, it seems like it was back in February. I don't think there's anything that we can draw from much of that, to be honest with you. Although it is interesting to have some confirmation of story titles, and whether those two stories are linked or not would also be interesting, given the titles.
Hmm.
What do you think, Brian?
About the titles? I drifted there, man. Go on. What do you
just anything?
Me?
What do you think about anything? What do you think about anything?
I think the titles are linked, yeah.
Yeah, good. No, the actors that are chosen, sure.
Awkward.
I want to see the show. You know, it's great who's in it. I just want to see the show. You know what I mean?
Oh, this is like a moment of politician stumbles.
No, this is. I mean, like, I'm looking right now. I'm looking at the thing online about the Game of Thrones actor that's in the show. And I don't watch Game of Thrones, so I don't know her talent. I assume she's very good, and maybe she'll play a good part. The fact that
she's quite young, which is why I suspected.
Yeah, the fact that she could be a Coal Hill student concerns me just because that worked out so well last time. Yeah.
It's never worked out well. What are you talking about?
Well, it works out okay with Susan. That's kind of my
point. And well, then you announce a comedian is also going to be in the show, and that also with Moffat's track record for comedy.
Well, he's also an actor. He was in Russell T Davies' Cucumber, which is a strange sentence to construct. but he was.
Sort of share Brian's I don't really care about any of this feeling.
Yeah.
I know it's a terrible thing to say, but I really can't get invested. And I think part of the reason is that I've felt such trepidation for each series of Doctor Who for the last few years. And sometimes with good reason, sometimes a mixed bag. And sometimes, like the anniversary year, there was some very good stuff there. But because I feel this trepidation, this sort of news coming up doesn't fill me with excitement. I just almost don't want to know. I just want to sort of see the thing and just hope it's okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay. Well, Fourth Doctor. What about him?
What about him?
What about him? Well, he's back in 2017 for a sixth series of audio adventures.
Good Lord, sixth.
Recording again in separate studios with Lalla Ward.
Oh, that should be nice then.
And John Leeson. There's two sets of stories. Some of them are between The Leisure Hive and Megloss, and some are between Megloss and Full Circle. I think really we're getting to the stage where people. I'd be interested to hear it actually, but I think more and more people want to kind of hear Matthew Waterhouse with him now, don't they? And chronologically, they're moving in that direction.
You know, it's a shame with his era because, in my opinion, a lot of the best ones are lost now. Lalla Ward, though, I count among the best ones, and thankfully she's doing them still. So we have a very limited scope of companions that he can do audios with. Mm. And I have to be honest, you know, obviously since he's the Doctor who hasn't been the Doctor the longest, and for the longest time gap, I guess I should say, it took a little while to get used to him a bit more so than the rest, especially since not only has his voice changed, but his acting for the Doctor has changed very much. Rather than being that big blustery man that he was, he's a little bit more subdued with certain things. And the way that you can tell the writers wrote the lines, very specific Tom Baker, you can tell that they were meant to be delivered another way because those writers are writing with the 70s Tom Baker in mind. Uh-huh. Now, I'm not trying to down him because the stories are interesting, but where I'm coming from with them lately is I'm getting bored of hearing he and Leela together all the time. And I you guys probably know this, but I like Leela, but she's never been my favorite. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a shame. Like, thankfully, we had one series with Mary Tam that was able to happen before she had passed. And Lala Ward did do Robert Gareth, is that his name? Gareth Roberts, books, adaptations that were quite
Mansour
nice.
Crime and The English Way of Death.
Yeah, they were quite nice because they had like a bit of a classic-ish kind of feel to them, presumably because they were older books. But hearing that she's going to do more with Tom now actually does make me a bit happier, just because I like the dynamic between the two of them. And I'll be honest, even though they may record in separate booths or separate locations or what have you, they sound great together. And they work well together. I guess maybe in that respect, it works well. I don't know what it is, but it was definitely a nice change of pace. And I really enjoyed them a lot more over the Leela stories, which I don't want to downplay because Louise Jameson does a great job and she's got a lot to work with Leela in the Big Finish plays. But, you know, just when you're only hearing Tom with Leela all the time, it does get a little boring. You know, with the other doctors, you have so many different companions to choose from. So I'd welcome an Adric story, even though Matthew Waterhouse sounds completely weird on audio doing that 50-year-old man trying to do a 15-year-old kid's voice.
You know, I haven't heard it. Did it not work?
Oh, God. Well, you know, I mean, if you hear him in interviews now, you know, when he talks, he's very, you know, he's an adult. He talks very much. He's got some age in his voice. And then when he does Matthew, when he does Adric, he's like, oh, I don't know, Leela. Why don't we go do this today? And you're like, what are you doing? You sound like an adult trying to do like a 5-year-old kid's voice. You're not even trying to do like your Adric voice. Just use your voice. You know, you're older. It's fine. We'll get past it. It was really jarring.
Do you think Big Finish should be or should have, I don't know, done a bit like they did with the originally when they started using, well, it wasn't originally when they started using Nyssa, but when they'd use the Nyssa as the old Nyssa for do you think they should have been taking some more of that approach and trying to perhaps even create sort of like we were talking about Marvel and DC do and sort of almost like create realities or e-space bubbles or duplicates or ways of actually having
clone
older
Adric
versions? Well, yeah. I know it sounds silly.
Oh, but of course, we're all Adric clones, aren't we?
No, unfortunately. Yes, it could have worked that way. I think, however, that would get rather old as an idea if every time you saw the Doctor with a companion, it was an alternate reality version, an older version, or kind of story.
I'm just thinking of ones where the age is, I mean, because he was a young teenager. You know, it's very hard to do a young teenager, as you say, at 50.
Yeah, well, they did do a story
unless
with an alternate kind of reality Adric, but they didn't cast Matthew Waterhouse.
Right.
You know, and it did work. Yeah, they had cast another, I forget which story it was now, because it was a couple years ago, and they just told some tale of an Adric that, I guess, didn't die on the ship somehow, some way, something happened.
This is the Andrew Sachs one, isn't it?
Yes, that's the Andrew Sachs one.
Andrew Sachs played Manuel in Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, there you go. And it worked. And, you know, I mean, it's nice that they have access to all the actors. But I don't know if that necessarily means that you should use them. Because right now they just wrapped up a storyline with the older Nyssa. And I don't know. It's getting tough these days to reconcile these stories within the continuity of the TV show. Anymore, I view them as more of an expanded universe thing. And Whereas once I used to just view them as if they were the show, these stories could have slotted within the gaps. They used to write them that way. But now the way that they have to develop the characters, including the Doctor, they have to make them all grow in ways that they never did in the show. And technically, with Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, and Paul McGann, you can do that easily because we never really got to see a lot of the years leading up to their ends. But with somebody like Peter Davison, his era is kind of wrapped up in a nice little bow. It's a little difficult to reconcile how all the characters have grown. And then when you get to their final episodes, which of course were on TV, they've reverted back to what they were prior to all of this character development that happened in Big Finish. Now, I'm not downing it because they are good stories and they are good fun to listen to. But anymore, I can't reconcile them within the same continuity within the show. It's just another story, like a comic book to read or something like that, another thing to enjoy. So I guess in that respect, it's fine. They can do what they want with the characters, even make their voices sound a little jarring. Or the storyline, like you had mentioned with the older Nyssa, did actually work. It was a good idea. It worked well. They did an odd thing within it where they decided to have her revert in age back to the Nyssa that we knew, even though mentally she was the older Nyssa. Which you sit there and you wonder, why bother? You know, it's audio. Why do we need that? You know, that you should have just left her as the older Nyssa. That's all we really needed to know. You know, I thought about this with another audio story, actually, something they did in audio, which I just felt would have worked better on TV. But it's just something like that, like little things like that. I get what you're trying to do, and maybe it made it easier for your artists to work the covers for your stories, but I didn't feel something like that was necessary. It worked so well that this was an older character that everybody knew, and we should have that older visual in our head to help us along with that.
Would you find it good then if they did a, I always think they've got a problem, so they can never, I know that they're talking of doing with the Colin Baker, but doing a final story that leads up to bookending their range with wherever the television series ends their Doctor. So if they did a story for the Fifth Doctor, which perhaps alluded to some sort of temporal or mental reboot for him and Perry, would you be able to then assess it within the range? Would it fall back into the universe?
Honestly, it would certainly be more helpful. But again, you'd have to do it for Perry. You'd have to do it for Turlough, for Tegan. Even a lot of what Nyssa did, because with Nyssa, you have when Tegan left that one time and then the Doctor and Nyssa supposedly traveled alone, but we never really got to see much of it because Tegan came back the very next story. You know, they have in Big Finish countless number of stories now together within that gap. But now Nyssa also has time after that gap as well. What they maybe should have done, in my opinion, was take a point in the Doctor's life where you can actually, like for instance, I don't know, Frontios, when the Doctor took, I can't remember the creature's name in that thing, but when he took them back to their home world.
Travis?
And presumably he did that by himself. So what the, and Big Finish has played with that gap before, but I think that they maybe Tegan was with him at that point. Regardless, there's a point in Peter Davison's life where he did do something by himself, and I can't remember what it is, but it would have been better to have placed like an older Nyssa storyline there and have the Doctor and Nyssa traveling together alone there. You can do anything you wanted there, really, and have the Doctor come back and kind of be his old self with his older companions again. It's just, it's nitpicking, to be perfectly honest, from me. Because these actors are doing great things for us. Big Finish are doing great things for us. They're telling very nice stories. And we're getting a lot more with these characters that we enjoy so much. It's just for somebody like me, I've got like one of those catalog type minds. I like to make sense of everything. I like to put it all neatly in a box and have it all work together.
Brian, have you heard The Ghosts of Enspace?
Yes.
Because John Pertwee doesn't
that,
sound
the
any
one? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. John Pertwee obviously doesn't sound anything like he sounded 20 years earlier.
No,
25 years earlier. So yeah. But, it's not just a Big Finish thing, is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh no, it's not. But Big Finish are the ones who are currently, you know, what are they? They just got their contract renewed up to what?
Yeah,
2020,
up to 2020. Or... Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem 5 minutes since they last had it renewed.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, it's like when you look at it, I get what you're saying. There were two Pertwee audios. There was certainly, yeah. There was also the, what was that? The Pescatons with Tom Baker.
Yeah. Well, I think that was in the 70s, though, wasn't it? The Pescatons?
It was in the 70s. It was at that time. So there were other audios. And then you even have the BBV audios, which tried to be Doctor Who, which weren't really Doctor Who and so on. It's just, I don't know. Anymore I listen to them, and it's like, okay, I get that we can fit some gaps within these stories, but you guys are... right now, Big Finish's output exceeds the output of the classic series of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It's a little bit tough. It's a little bit tough to keep track of, especially when they're all over the place. Certainly, poor Colin Baker. He gets a lot of really good stories, and he gets a lot of really good character development for his Doctor. But unfortunately, his Doctor is all over the board with companions and time loops and time... situations that it's hard to keep track. You know, he travels with the Eighth Doctor's companion, Charlotte Pallard, at one point, which you then have to reconcile, which is fine. They made that work. But then he's got this Fitz companion for a little bit. It's and everybody's just for these short whiles. Even the Seventh Doctor, they kind of do the same thing with. And it's nice that you can tell these great stories. But I get a sense now, and to be honest, I used to speak a lot with Paul Sprague before that he passed away, who worked for Big Finish. And he used to be very good with their whole continuity. He used to be the guy who would help tell the audience where the story fit in. He would give the stories production codes to let you know where they fall in line with the TV show and with the Big Finish plays. It doesn't seem like they care about that anymore. If you look at the website now, their production codes don't follow that kind of system anymore. So the stories are just stories. They don't really care where they fit in. And to me, that's a big loss. I think a lot of people actually like to make sense of that sort of stuff, and I'm sure that some don't. But I think that's a very big loss. And I know that Paul and I went back and forth quite a few times on certain stories where, you know, he would sit there and he'd say, but no, but this is what's making sense here. And I would have to tell him, like, I get what you're saying, but the production code that you made suggests that it came after. And then he would realize, oh, whoops, I see what you're saying, and correct it. And it was nice. So it must be extremely difficult to try and keep a continuity even on their end. But it seems like that's all gone out the window. And when you listen to the plays anymore, that's what I can hear very easily. It doesn't matter where the story fits in. This is just the story we're telling this week. And maybe that's all that matters.
Is there an argument that it's kind of good? And obviously, as you've said, and I totally agree with your reasons for why it's kind of bad, but that it's kind of good in the sense that there's always been this illusion in Doctor Who, very, very loose illusion, that he literally does age hundreds of years. I mean, they've obviously played with it more of late. Yeah. But, you know, taking the times in Pertwee's era and McCoy and Dave and Tom Baker's as points of different ages, the larger you expand the range of stories that happened in those classic eras, the more you represent an idea that we only got a glimmer if the production was perhaps suggestive that they weren't so far apart. But there was actually just a glimmer of his life as a time traveler where things were, to coin the horrible phrase, timey-wimey, and there was a sort of backwards and forth of companions, and there was longer periods, and because there was just so much time that we don't see, and yet we are suggested did exist.
Yeah.
Say 740 or whatever it is for Tom Baker to 950 for Colin and Sylvester.
Yeah,
that's a lot of hundreds of years. Maybe they were predicting Big Finish and realized, damn, Big Finish are going to do hundreds of years of audio plays, so we better sort of make sure we give them some gaps from here in 1974 onwards.
Well, they're filling the gaps up quite well, because not only have we, well, we've mentioned the novel adaptations, but there's more novel adaptations coming as well.
Right.
There's cool. Justin Richards' Theatre of War in December, All Consuming Fire by Andy Lane. There's Nightshade, which was Mark Gatiss's, and it's been adapted by a new to Big Finish contributor called Kyle Sikora. Original Sin, which was another one by Andy Lane, and that's another one that had Chris Quedge and Ross Forrester in, which who we've seen in the who were in the new Thomas McCoy adaptation, Damaged Goods. And yeah, so that's five of them, and they kick off in December 2015. Then there's one in the first two, Theatre of War and All Consuming Fire, in December 2015. In 2016, April 2016, it's Nightshade, and then in December 2016, it's Original Sin. So it's, beg your pardon, it's four, not five.
Nightshade is one that I think would fit the Big Finish format very well.
Yeah, I think
I'm not sure Original Sin would particularly, but
I skipped a lot of that. I wasn't a fan of Quedge and Forrester, so I kind of skipped them.
Well, it's a sort of, as I recall it, it's a very much them chasing the Doctor in a sort of mega city-ish, you know, because there's obviously illusions of that sort of idea in the Adjudicators as played out in the New Adventures.
Yeah,
I don't know, but then I think it's really cool because, as I say, I think as I was saying on Facebook just yesterday, you know, there is a few days ago, the New Adventures were such a powerful time for change for Doctor Who, and yet obviously they do get lost and forgotten, and the amount of I mean, it was funny because I was having a debate over the issue of fans and how the idea that fans feel that they've lost Doctor Who to the new series, classic fans. They've lost their show. And I was sort of arguing that I don't think the fans ever did have the show. And this is just an illusion that fans have, that the classic series they had some control over, where they didn't. They had no power over it. In fact, they have more power over it now than they did then. You know, there's no ownership of it. And even when it comes to New Adventures, I mean, there is the argument that New Adventures sort of was where fans took control and they could say, well, that era was where we had control. And you, well, no, not again, because I remember that era and the fans didn't like the New Adventures. The fans hated them. A lot of them did.
Older fans didn't like them at all, did they?
Absolutely. I mean, you'd only have to sort of leaf through Doctor Who magazine and you see how many people just this conversation was with Frank Mallon. Okay. just to name him, because it sounds like I'm this nameless person who I was arguing and was victorious over. I wasn't victorious at all. We were just chatting about it. But yeah, I mean, this was a thing. I mean, I remember how shocked fans were. They were terrified by him in a lot of ways. You know, these ideas of suggested, romantic interests, prostitutes. You know, there was such sort of visceral deaths. It was really shocking for Doctor Who fans. So the fans rejected them as much as they were rejecting New Who. But then at the same time, at that point, they were all rejecting McCoy era. And now McCoy era has actually got more of a sort of golden era to it as much as Tom Baker era has. Not to all fans, but it has a far more rose-tinted memory. So, yeah, I think it's good that the New Adventures are getting into Big Finish, because it gives them more, I don't want to say canonicity because that's so fanish, but it gives them more visibility, more relevance, maybe. They're not so much a forgotten medium.
Yeah.
And they deserve that. Yeah. Deserve that.
A big weekend of news from Big Finish, then. Have I covered it all, though? Let me just double check. And Doom Coalition, which we've featured on Casterbris already, which is a new mini series for the Eighth Doctor, which comes out in October. Have you seen that, Brian? just let me finish, would you?
Dramatic pause.
Pregnant pause.
Yes, I have seen that.
Yeah, the character of the Eleven is an interesting proposal, isn't it? This is a brand new villain that's been introduced, and as the Big Finish website says, the Eleven is a Time Lord who retains each one of his personalities every time he regenerates, and is now in his 11th incarnation, and is an insane sociopath.
What happens when he's in his 12th incarnation? Is he called the 12?
Presumably, yeah.
That's a bit confusing. If you're going to be a villain, you want consistency. I think you want to be known throughout the galaxy. You don't want to go when people are like, yes, sir, 11. I'll do that. I'm 12 now. Excuse me? Yeah, I'm 12. You can't call me 11 today. I'm 12 now. Wow, did you have a birthday? No, I didn't have a birthday. I regenerated. I'm 12 now. Go away. I'll kill you.
I didn't realize you were played by Dick Van Dyke. Some consistency.
But yeah,
I love Dick Van Dyke. Can I just say I love Dick Van Dyke? They are. I love Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, good.
I think he's fantastic, Dick Van Dyke. That's the end of that. What was going on in the background there? What did I hear?
What did you hear?
I heard voices.
Maybe they're in your head. Maybe they're the other 10 you.
Yes.
I just have one more comment going back to the Big Finish stuff.
Okay.
The whole continuity thing. Like I said, the stories can easily be enjoyed without really having things fall into continuity. But we've already talked a million times on the podcast about Time War being the big excuse about how time can be rewritten and blah, blah, blah. But there's another great moment, which was in, I want to say, The Keeper of Trakan. Possibly Logopolis. I don't remember which one it was, but Adric and the Doctor are looking through some of the Doctor's old journals, and Adric tells him, you know, these things are confusing. On one page, I read about this thing that happened.
Yeah.
Another page, it says it never happened. And then on this page, it says it did happen, but a long time ago. So, you know, I mean, we can always take Doctor Who with that kind of vein that, you know, these things could have always happened and could have easily never happened after they did. And that's just the Doctor's life. So I don't want to downplay that the Big Finish plays by saying that they just don't make sense. I was just saying my own personal views. But I do see how as a fan, like we always used to do with fan speculation and try and fix continuity errors or whatnot, you can always do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought of it, wanted to mention it.
Okay, thanks.
That's a good idea. It's a good, well, it's a good, good
it is
point,
a good one, yeah. And it was the Keeper of Charkin.
Oh, right, yes.
That's the Keeper of Charkin. Thank you. Okay, so this is the point in the podcast where we start talking about recommendations and things. Have my podcasting colleagues come along with some recommendations this week?
I am going to... I'm gonna continue the X-Files thing. Everybody should rewatch the X-Files if you've already seen it. Enjoy the heck out of it again. If you haven't seen it, now's the time to pick it up and get ready for that show to come back.
Okay.
I've Ariel and I have been going through it. I've been trying to, even before we knew the show was coming back, just one of the shows I've always loved, so I tried to introduce her to it. We finally are at the final episode of season 9. And she's enjoyed the thing the whole way through, which is great. And now I'm feeling the need to go back and rewatch a lot of the conspiracy episodes, especially since knowing the show's come back. But I've always just enjoyed those. So I can't recommend The X-Files enough. Aside from that, I've only been watching Doctor Who and The Blacklist. So there you go. All those shows. Very good.
Okay. James?
Well, I suppose things I've watched this week... I have watched, for the first time, I watched Rear Window, actually, the Jimmy Stewart, Alfred Hitchcock
had that last
film.
Time.
Did we?
Yes.
Oh. I did actually watch it twice. I watched it again this week.
There you go.
So, screw you. I enjoyed it better on the second time round.
Yeah,
screw
okay.
You.
Okay, no, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have enjoyed it.
I watched, Musketeers. The finale was this week. I think it's probably worth mentioning since it's another BBC show and it's nice for us to support all things British and Britannia, which was a pretty good end. Mark Warren was finally looks like he's out of the show, which I mean, I like Mark Warren. I liked him in Love and Monsters. I know people sometimes have little cardiac arrests when anyone mentions that show. I loved him in that. I thought he was great in Life on Mars.
He was good in Life on Mars.
Wonderful
he was really
things.
Sinister in Life on Mars, wasn't he?
Yeah, very good.
He did a good job in Musketeers, in all fairness. It's just the problem was, and we can go back to Doctor Who with this, Peter Capaldi's role in the first series was so much more
meaty.
Rich. His character. I mean, he wasn't a Machiavellian evil madman that you've got in the second series, which is a bit... you know, done and little there's not much you can do with it apart
we
from
can
hate
maybe
the guy.
See why they went in that direction because in Richelieu is kind of often portrayed in that way, isn't he?
Yeah, but so, I mean, he's more interesting when you make him a patriot.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't argue with that at all.
And that's what made him so interesting was it wasn't it was I mean Peter Capaldi was good, but it was the fact the character was given a layer that you could see the things he did were because he genuinely believed they were right for his country. They were not out of self-interest. So Mark Warren's character suffered coming after that and sort of almost being a regression, a sort of a reductive villain type. And it just didn't work as well. But it still has been a very good series. It's been very enjoyable. And I've liked it a lot. So I really do recommend... people watch that. I think that's a good damn fun. I've also got onto second episode of Ripper Street, going back to the beginning of that as well. And again, another great British show, which if you've not watched, I really do recommend. That first series is actually very, very good.
It is. Okay, my recommendations. I've got a few, actually, because I've been watching a lot of different stuff. Firstly, I will third your Ambassadors of Death nominations from a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, nice.
I worked my way back through Ambassadors of Death. I'd forgotten how really, really good it is. It's one of those ones that doesn't feel like it's got any padding in it.
Mm.
Because it's all so well written. So, enjoyed all of the Ambassadors of Death. Some good, great performances in there as well. The guy that was later on in Crossroads, he was the guy who played... Ronald Allen, who played the guy in charge of the space mission.
Yes, he was. He was a very charming character, given that he had nothing really to do.
He came
across very well.
Yeah, he was really good. So that's good. And obviously, you've got the great stunt scene in early in the
the shootout scene early in the story. So lots of fun with that. I've also been watching some classic British comedies. I've been watching One Foot in the Grave, which you may or may not know stars Richard Wilson from The Empty Child. Doctor Who fans. Lots of other people in it from time to time. And also, I've been watching. Now, this may raise eyebrows, or it may lead to shook heads, or it may be appreciative chin strokes. I've been watching the first series of Last of the Summer Wine, which has a reputation in the UK as being. And you see there. That's the thing. That's the reputation coming through on the plane. But he doesn't know what I'm talking about, basically. Because Lost in Summer Wine has this reputation of being this light, fluffy old people doing silly things in Yorkshire in the summertime, riding down hills in bathtubs with on wheels and things like that. But the first
pool of water at the bottom,
presumably, yeah. But the first few series of Lost in Summer Wine are really quite grimy and very post-war. There's a lot of the interaction between the three leads, who at that point were Peter Salas, who you'll know from as the voice of Wallace in Wallace and Gromit films, Bill Owen, who was Compo, and now the original guy from Last of the Summer Wine,
Michael Bates,
was Michael Bates. Thanks, James, who can Google faster than me.
I knew all along. I just liked to see stuff.
Yeah, of course you did. And so basically what happened, they're having conversations and they're walking around, and there's a lot of the similar sort of repartee and interaction between the three main characters, but it's the subject matter that they're discussing and the tone that it's done in and the shooting. They don't mind if it's raining, whereas, you know, when it got into the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, if it was raining, it was virtually, you know, they'd wait until it stopped raining, or they'd put on the big location lights and make it look like it was a nice sunny day. But in those days, it didn't. And the place where it's filmed, Holmesworth, which is a really beautiful little village, well, it was a village, it's more of a town these days, doesn't look how it looks. It's not as picturesque as it is now, 40 years on. It's kind of quite dull and grimy. If this topic interests you in any way, I suggest you... do you remember it was on the radio Christmas before last on a documentary about Doctor Who? It was... put together by a chap called Bob Fisher, who's BBC T's radio presenter. He's got a web page about this, about watching Last of the Summer Wine from the start, which is kind of what got me started. So I'll link to that in the show notes for you. It's a fascinating look at how things were in the 1970s. Often when we look at TV shows set in the, or filmed in the 1970s that were comedies or dramas, it's all very suburban. But this is quite the opposite. So it's certainly worth taking a look at. It's certainly not what you think Last of the Summer Wine is, and it's certainly nothing like, you know, things like Bless His House or Terry and June or anything like that. It's an interesting bit of social history, really. So that's my final recommendation this week.
It's a pity I didn't hear it. I muted you as soon as you said Last of the Summer Wine. What was that?
Okay, then. So next week we're doing something a bit different with the podcast because it's Easter. And we're all indisposed on the bank holiday Monday. But we will still be bringing you a podcast. If you've any comments on this week's podcast, or if you would like to get in touch with us, by all means, tweet us or leave us a message on Facebook. You can also, if you listen on Audio Boo, you feel free to leave us a reply on Audio Boo. You can actually record a message to us, and then we'll listen to it. And if it's an entertaining message, then we may put it in the podcast. That could be fun. If you're listening via iTunes, by the way, please give us a rating and a review, because that will help the podcast immeasurably. And until next time, it's a very happy Easter from us, and watch some Doctor Who, people. Bye-bye.
You want them to watch Doctor Who, people.
or the show. It depends, you know, if they're in Cardiff, then watch Doctor Who people.
Okay, just, you know, hey, to each their own.